Good morning and welcome to our virtual meeting. It's 10:30 a.m. on October 4th, 2021, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. In accordance with the Governor's Proclamation 20-28.15, we are holding meetings remotely. Today we have with us Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, our Vice President, Commissioner Tony Olson, our Secretary, John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, Ann Spangler, our General Counsel, Melissa Collins, our Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, our Assistant Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich and Lila Wall, our Deputy Clerks of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute and turn off the camera on your devices when not speaking. This session is for the Board and CEO General Manager to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. If there's a public request to comment and time remains, 15 minutes will be allowed at the end of the briefing session. So first up, we have agenda item one, our CEO General Manager briefing and study session. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Commissioners. Hope everybody is doing well, had a nice weekend. Monday morning, what a great way to start the week with a commission meeting. First up, we have our amazing Aaron Sweeney with our media update. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning. Amazing. I hope I can live up to that. Good morning. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm filling in for Julia this morning, who is away doing her public service of jury duty this morning. So, you know, we'll see how that goes for her. we've been awfully busy with media over the past few weeks with the shutoff moratorium ending. We had a little storm a couple weeks ago. So, you know, our Kelly and I, our phone has been ringing off the hook. So we've been kind of running around doing some interviews and getting the word out on a number of different things. First up, prior to the moratorium ending on Friday, October 1st, we sent out a press release about a week before that, just trying to kind of get the news out to our customers that are behind on bills that, you know, we have help for them, that we've got extended payment arrangements, all that kind of stuff. So we put that out. That got picked up by a couple of blogs. But really, last week, the TV news got really interested in it. Obviously, the day before the moratorium was going to end. So we got a number of calls from King, Cairo, Como. You know, we had worked with customer service and government relations prior to the disconnection moratorium ending. And our message was really clear. Call us if you're behind on your bill. We have help. We have options to help to get you current. We also really wanted customers to know we were proactively reaching out to them to let them know, you know, that we're here for them and that we weren't really returning to our old disconnection process. It wasn't just going to be, you know, one day, you know, October 1st, we're just going to start shutting the lights off on people. And I think the media really thought that was what was going to happen. So it was nice to be able to have that opportunity to get up there and say, no, you know, we're really wanting to help our customers and work with them throughout this process. So we had pieces on Cairo and King and Como, and I think they turned out really well. Next up, we had a decent little windstorm hit the north end of our service territory a few weeks ago. And obviously, nobody loves a good storm forecast than TV news, right? They're Johnny on the spot when that starts coming in. So we actually got pinged by King, Como, Cairo, and Q13, all kind of in the lead up and during that short windstorm. It wasn't much. I think we lost power to a couple thousand customers, but it was great to get the message out again. You know, pay attention to the outage map, be prepared for when the lights go out, and we'll be able to get out there as fast as possible to get them on again. Our microgrid continued to get some good pub. There was a nice story in the North County Outlook, and there was also a good one in microgrid knowledge. So that, you know, that the story of our microgrid continues to get out in the media. An interesting story that I worked with a reporter for the Everett Post on was about undergrounding lines. And that was a good way to tell people, you know, there's a lot of information that we have to go through to decide whether we're going to underground lines versus overhead. It's not just an easy decision. There's a lot more costs and maintenance takes a lot more longer on underground lines. So that was also a nice to get that message out there and tell customers, you know, it's not, I know that when storms hit, it seems easy to just say, well, why don't you just put all the lines underground? It's something we hear every storm season. And honestly, it comes down to cost and time. So that was a good opportunity to get that message out. Our column, our Herald column for October is on Energy Awareness Month, and it was a lot of tips on getting your home ready for fall and cold season. So tips on how to reduce energy and save money. And then also it's Public Power Week. So happy Public Power Week, everybody. We have a number of ways that we're celebrating this week, including a sponsorship on NPR. We're doing ads on NPR talking about the benefits of public power and how the PUD serves its customers. We also bumped up the date of sending out our Wire e-newsletter so that it kind of could go out during Public Power Week. And it's promoting John's customer video, which should be hitting the website real soon. Our current fall magazine, which has great employee profiles in it, is going to be hitting customers' mailboxes this week for Public Power Week. And like I just mentioned, we recorded a video with John that's going to be talking about Public Power Week and the benefits of that. And that should be up on the website today. Lastly, you know, Flex Energy, the program launched on October 1st, and we've done a really kind of going on above and beyond to talk to customers that have joined that program. So we send a nice welcome packet out to these customers with a brochure, a magnet, a small gift for a conservation bundle. And we also send out an email to them on the day before we went live on October 1st to remind them of what's happening. And we're just really trying to over-communicate with our Flex Energy customers because that's a program that's new to a lot of people, and we want to make sure they have the information they need. So for me, that's it. Any questions?
I want to thank you for that article on the tips for saving energy. I thought that was excellent. And I read a really good article in the NWPPA, I think it was September issue, about our Sultan Fish project, Fish and Water. That was also quite good.
That it's so easy to brag on those things. I mean, we've done so much good work up on the Sultan. So the 10-year anniversary was a great time to just kind of take a look back and talk about all the amazing things we've done out there.
Thank you.
You bet.
This is Commissioner Olson. I'm glad that you brought up the article on undergrounding, because I was going to. That was one of the most, that was one of the, in terms of describing the cost and everything.
Yeah.
That was one of the clearest explanations.
Oh, good.
And
I'm
background
glad.
On it that I have ever seen.
That's great. Yeah. Aaron Janisco and Mark Fleury were huge help. They gave me so much information. So, and I'm really glad the reporter added a lot of that info to
make it clear. Very well done.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, I was going to comment as well. I thought it was very succinct, and we don't see those articles very often, but we get that questioned a lot. So,
right.
That was a great article.
Yeah, and it made me think maybe it's something to pitch to the Herald to get it to a wider audience, you know, just that idea of why we don't underground as much.
Yeah, I would even go as far as say it was amazing, Aaron.
I'll take it. On a Monday morning, too.
Commissioner.
All right. Excellent job, Aaron. And we, again, are very fortunate to have the talented communications team that we do with Aaron and Kelly and Julie and Krista, just the whole gang. They do fabulous things to help promote our PUD. So next up is the legislative update and information that was provided in your packet. And we have Kim Johnston and her amazing team with us today. If there are any questions or comments.
Questions, commissioners?
No, I don't have any. So,
you know, my only question, and this isn't really in part of this report, but I'm wondering how clued in our state representatives are on the amount of customer debt we're carrying and how we're going to be working on that.
Sure. Allison, could you get Clark off of mute to answer that question, as he's the one that's been doing all of that work behind the scenes?
Yeah, he's already been allowed to unmute since Commissioner Logan started questioning. He just needs to unmute.
Good morning, Commission. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. Well, and thank you, Allison, for getting me off mute. So we've been engaging with a lot of our legislators just generally about the concerns about racking arrears on our customers and including the Department of Commerce and the governor's office as well, trying to navigate, you know, next steps looking ahead and the legislative session coming up. As far as the specific numbers, when we've been engaging with legislators and when it's been part of the discussion, we've been updating them on the most recent or most up-to-date arrears numbers. And there's been a lot of expression of interest in, you know, seeing how we can work together looking ahead in the legislative session. So a lot of our delegation is relatively aware of at least the sizable impact that the pandemic has had on our customers.
Great, thank you. Any other questions on the report, commissioners?
I enjoyed the, excuse me, I did enjoy some of the interesting reads. Thank you for those.
All right. Thanks very much, Kim and Clark. So next up, we'll move into an update on our North County Community Office, and that will be with Jessica Robb Holgren. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So here today, I'm a project manager here in facilities. I've been with the district about 4 years now, and this is my first commission presentation, so I'm really excited to be here. Wanted to give you a quick update on the North County office, the community office. Let's see here. Oh, I'm sorry, excuse me. Okay, here we go. wanted to start with a recap. Our last meeting with you was in February. So just taking a look back in February, a lot has happened since then. We've had some great projects being completed. I'm sure you're aware the CEC has really, that project is done. The modular data center has come together. And then obviously some, you know, we've obviously been working really hard on the North County Community Office. So today just wanted to go through schedule updates just to let you know where we're at. Early site work update to show you that progress. Quickly go through the community office, the program refinement, and some of the future programming we have planned for North County. This timeline here is just, it shows just the whole program. You can see we started in 2019 with programming. We've gone through schematic development design already. Currently, we're in construction documents, so those are being designed right now. We're looking at permitting in January through March, bidding in March through May, and then construction starting in June of next year is our hope. With completion and move-in, we're looking at moving in after storm season in February of 2024, so that's really exciting. And here are some cool pictures. Pictures always make it fun. So this is the early site development. This work is almost complete. So this portion of the project is going to prepare for the major construction that's going to happen next year. So big, big thank you to Ben Davis and Jerome Drescher. They really worked hard to get this done. So what the early site work development was, is we put in water lines and fire hydrants, as you can see, a lot of the work underground conduit, and we did a first pass at paving. So it looks really good, very exciting. And here we'll start to talk about, I wanna mention our office advisory team. So we had a group of folks from all over the district to help us refine some of the requirements and operational needs that would help us in designing the office. And so we had, as you can see, a lot of great folks here. And they helped us take the information and the work that was done back in 2019, 2018 of the initial requirements for this project. And it was really great to see these folks helping us out. So thank you to all of them as well. So the objectives of the advisory team, we wanted to stay first and foremost with safety-focused design. We wanted to make sure we're planning for a long-term community and customer presence. We're gonna be in the area for quite a while, which is really great. And designing this facility as a 50-year facility. So we wanna think now and minimize any impacts of any future expansion we may need to do, and kind of what technologies will be coming online, and really trying to forward think this design for a 50-year facility. Next, we wanted to improve the operational efficiency for district activities. So flow around the site, any sort of, you know, things that, you know, crews might need to crews and office and everyone involved in that community office to make their lives easier to do their job and serve our customers the best that they can. So, and then it's really great, even though we were in the middle of the pandemic at that point when we were meeting with the advisory team, it gave us a great way to, we still connected and created that team within the advisory team. So that was really great to get to know everybody from all over the district. So that was really great. So here I'm going to start walking through the construction costs. Now the construction cost, this is the public works contract that we're going to talk about here today. Just wanted to give you an update on where we're at with that. Back the initial budget, that was a $26.3 million budget. We've then, like I said, we've done some refining to the program and really tried to future-proof this office for us here. And you can see we've got the second floor. We've added a second floor here to this building. And we initially had it as a shell and core to try and figure out what we might want to do with it in the future. And I think we've got there's some plans in the works, some thoughts being kicked around to maybe it's a backup energy center. Maybe it's a energy control center or power scheduling. So we're still working through those details. So that's a second floor that we're going to add to the building. And then I'll break this down a little bit here. The program ads that we have here of $3.3 million, and these came out of our meetings with the advisory team. So I just want to show you here how this breaks out a little bit. So, and it'll break out further in the next slide, but we have electric vehicle charging, operational needs, some facility redundancy, HVAC efficiency. We have solar going in here, and just kind of that other. So I'll show you what that means here. So just to further break it out, I'll go kind of clockwise here. So electric vehicle charging, we'll have electric vehicle charging for customers and for district use. So in our pool cars, which is going to be great. So we're trying to, you know, we're anticipating, you know, more and more electric vehicles, again, through the district and also with customers. Operational needs. So some of the operational things here that you'll see. We've got a facility shop, so we're going to have a maintenance mechanic and be able to respond to any maintenance needs right away. So that's going to be a full shop there. We have an expanded tool room we'll be staffed with a toolman day one. So that's really great. So that'll be a great way to set up crews right away with all their tool needs. We've gone ahead, we're paving the pole yard and that's really great. So that'll be really helpful for the crews. Let's see, system facility and redundancy. So we are doing this warehouse specifically, just to call out the warehouse, we'll have we did some structural improvements. So then that generator and UPS systems as well. So this redundancy is meant to, if there's an earthquake or some sort of event like that, our buildings will be, you know, strong. We'll be able to stand up our operations really quickly. They'll be ready to go. And so that really is going to be a huge benefit to our customers. I think if there is an event, then we'll be able to get to work there and help them and not have any downtime from any facility damage. So that's really great. HVAC efficiency. So a lot of that has come through with COVID, increased air flows through the building to make sure that we, you know, are taking care of our employees who are working inside the building. And we've got it's efficiency, energy efficiency as well. So a couple of things there that I think are really going to benefit the buildings in the long run. You can see here we have photovoltaics. So we have a solar system that's going to go onto the warehouse. It's about 45 kW. We're still kind of working on that. But energy code nowadays actually requires us to make the building solar ready. So that's really exciting. And that solar will be used internally in the district. So it'll be used to power our buildings, basically, is what we're going to use that for. So that's really exciting that we can really utilize that. And then in the other bucket, we have some safety improvements that we wanted to make sure, you know, our maintenance team is safe when they're working on roofs, for example. That's obviously really important. So a few safety improvements that we wanted to make. And then we've got some curbing requirements on 63rd that the city has asked us to put in there. So minor work for that, but that was something that we didn't plan for at first, didn't know that was going to come up. So for these program additions, you know, we want to come back and request an approval support for additional design service. So in order to do these, we do have to work with our consultant in construction documents now and work through that, and hoping to come back to you with an amendment probably within the next month or so. But that's kind of wanted to give you an update of what's included and what the advisory team came up with, which again, really great stuff there. So here, want to talk to you about programming. So this is the site overall. We have these items planned in our 5-year capital budget already. So additional things like pole yard development, some additional pole yard development, a training area, continuing to develop that. We are looking at a truck scale eventually and some more heated storage. We've got a lot of storage needs, and we found that out through working with our advisory team as well. And then looking at the second floor and what that may look like as far as occupancy. So these items are already planned, and we're looking forward to start, you know, working on those once we get the office built and the warehouse and loading dock. So very, very exciting. And then just to lay out the next steps for the commission, looking here, we've got the amendment I just spoke about, a professional services contract amendment for the additional design services coming in October, November. The early site work, public works contract, so final acceptance of that. That work, as I showed earlier, is pretty much done, so that's really, really great. And in June, just looking forward to the public works contract award to actually start building the office. So very, very exciting time. So thank you. Here's some renderings just to give you a little sneak peek of what the building's going to look like. From 59th. So if you're driving north or south on 59th, this is what you'll see in the future. So very exciting. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you. Questions for Jessica?
Well, that was a great premiere, or your debut was beautiful. Mm-hmm. I have two questions. One is, this will be heated, the HVAC system, is that natural gas?
No, electric.
It's all electric?
Yes, yes.
And so is that with heat pumps? Or
we have a variety. There are heat pumps. It depends on the space that we wanted to make sure that we put the right unit in for the right space. So
wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful. And the other, this is kind of maybe what you would think is a necessary question, but do pole yards have to be paved always?
Well, the reason we've decided to go with paving here is it had gravel in the beginning, and if we're going to store transformers or old poles, and there was a spill or rainwater was to get on the poles, it would infiltrate into the ground. So when we pave them, there's a few things that happen. We add a filtration system in, so anything that a contaminant, or if there was a spill, it would filter into that system. And so that's And the paving is really good for truck traffic. So I think as time goes on, this pole yard is going to get used more and more and more. So it's better designed for heavy trucks, and the warehouse can move items better on the pavement. But yes, it is treated pavement area.
Okay, great. Thank you. That explains it perfectly. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Very exciting project.
Yes.
This is Commissioner Olson. I just did have and I may have just misheard you. Did you say the potential for a backup data center I thought that that had already been identified as the backup data center.
We have, well, there's the modular data center, which is on site and already.
Okay. Built. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I misunderstood. And number two, are we going to, in general, in our program schedules, anticipate the probability that due to the delay in the availability of some basic materials and equipment that some of these schedules may need to move out?
That is a possibility. Yeah, that is a possibility. When we get these drawings and they've been out to bid, I think we can really work with our contractor to identify any long lead items and kind of where the global supply chain is in general. And in June, it may change, but yeah, unfortunately it is a little bit in flux right now, but we're definitely going to do our best to try and mitigate that, but no, that is a possibility.
Mm-hmm. And I have a third one, sorry.
Okay.
God, I went off the top of my head right now. The additional $3 million.
Yes.
Does that come out of your budget contingency? If not, is it going to be able to be absorbed in the existing or the proposed budget?
The contingency, so that $3.3 million is for the public works contract, and right. That is not part of the contingency. So we would have a contingency within that public works contract.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is an additional. So therefore, you're going to let it towards the end of this year. So has this additional money been included in the proposed 2022 budget?
Yes, we've adjusted our budget to make okay. sure. So and it's split over a couple of years because construction is about 15 yeah. months long. Yeah. Yeah. So yes, but we have updated our budget with that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just had a couple of questions. First question is, I'm assuming that the new rooftop solar will integrate in with the microgrid, so it'll be able to charge the batteries along with the community solar.
So that is something that's a little over my engineering. We are working on making sure everything is integrated. As far as the details for that, we are just starting to work those out now. But the idea is to be able to operate as independently as possible. Yeah.
Okay. And then what percentage of the office space, I know all the second floor space is for district staff, mm-hmm. but what percentage of the office space on the ground floor is for our crews and stuff, as opposed to the public facing part? Any rough idea?
Yeah. So, oh boy, I'm trying to think of square footage. So we have a crew room dedicated to the crew closer to the warehouse and loading dock. And then the public space is on the other side, on the west side of the building. So that would be, you know, our customer service lobby. We would have conference rooms up there that customers can rent. So that's something there, but I'm trying to think of square footage. I'm guessing the crew room is about maybe 2000 square feet. Maybe I could be wrong. Okay. But they are separate. They are separate.
Okay.
This is Jason. Uh-huh. This is Jason, AGM of Facilities, Generation, Power, and Transmission. And I was just going to say that we can get back to you with those details, Commissioner.
Yeah. Yep.
I just was wondering for approximates. I mean, I know we talked about one thing when we started out, but now we're reevaluating our community office spaces. And so I'm just wondering if this redesign incorporates, you know, all of our latest thinking about what our community office spaces are going to look like going forward.
Yes, yes. And that's where the advisory team came in and was really a great help with that, is to be able to help us identify what the future is going forward. So, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's clear from your talk that we're looking at the additional pieces we may need for resiliency, mm-hmm. as far as if we have natural disasters and stuff. So we've gone beyond the data center now, and look at power scheduling and ECC, and so that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
Great. Great presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent job, Jessica. And I would just elaborate on the ECC backup. That is the primary purpose now for the second floor, which is one of the more significant changes. So we will have and do have the backup data center, but we'll also have, which we had actually pushed out farther in the future originally, but the ECC or energy control and power scheduling backup that will be on the second floor. So we'll have, again, the resiliency and all the backup, both data center and control centers in the one location. So that's a great change.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is Jason. I'll just add to John's point, as we looked at that, it just didn't make sense to come back, you know, a couple years later and then build that, continue to build onto the building that backup ECC. And so we moved that up in the schedule. I'm very excited about that. And I know the folks in distribution engineering services are as well. That'll be a big plus for us.
Do we have any thoughts about how we'll use that space during normal times? Will we have staff there? If staff work in the north part of the county, will they be able to report to work and do their job functions from that location? Or will it just be a place that we only use when we have a disaster?
So there are ongoing discussions about that right now, Commissioner Logan, and I don't believe that's been fully decided yet. But one thing we know is that, you know, we do need to have folks in there on a semi-frequent basis just to ensure that everything is operating correctly. We found that same thing in power scheduling. You know, we got to have folks both at our current office in the annex and then also out at the ECDC at the operations center.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
No, I have none.
All right. Again, great job, Jessica. Next up is an item that we talked about a few commission meetings ago and wanted to bring the kind of the overall due diligence back to the board, and that's on the decorative wraps of our district underground equipment or pad mount equipment. And Tyler Ryans is going to talk us through that. Good morning, Tyler.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, good morning.
Okay, we're having technical difficulties here. It's not giving me my video control anymore. There we go. All right. Good morning. as John said, my name is Tyler Reinitz. I'm a principal engineer in the Transmission and Distribution Standards Department, and I'm here this morning to give an update on the decorative wraps on our equipment. Let's see here. This thing's fighting me. There we go. I think I got control of it now, hopefully. Allison, do you know why it won't let me control?
If you just click on that title page once and then use your arrow keys like you were, it should work.
There we go. Thank you. All right. So kind of an overview of what we'll go over here is just a brief history, kind of where we've been and where we're headed. A summary of that new decorative wrap program, what's changed as far as why we're allowing this now, some benefits to the customers, benefits to the district, and then time for questions. And if at any time you do have questions, feel free to just jump in at any point. We don't have to wait till the end. So a brief history. I've been in the standards group now for 12 years. So I have pretty much a decent history of where we've been on this. We've allowed for pad mounted equipment to be repainted a single color for many years. We've also occasionally allowed for screening, and we'll see some examples of those here in a minute. This is all currently managed via our electrical service requirements variance process. So if there is a request to alter the appearance of any equipment, that will come in through a variance application to the standards group, and then we evaluate those on a case-by-case basis, generally approving them with some requirements back to the customer. Vinyl wrapping in the past has been a prohibitive method of beautifying the equipment and has been encouraged to be allowed by many municipal customers and developers over the years because of examples that folks have seen both locally and in other places that they've visited.
And Tyler, why have we prohibited in the past?
We just weren't sure of it yet. We didn't want to be the first ones out there doing it, and we wanted to see a track record and some history of them being applied on equipment. You know, virtually they're the same thing as what you would see like wrapped on the buses and other things around town. So there's a long history of them being applied on other things, just not necessarily, or there wasn't necessarily that background on power equipment yet.
Could I interrupt for a second?
Yeah.
This is an environmental issue, but I think the reason they were prohibited is because vinyl is very toxic. And I want to read you something. During its life cycle from production to use to disposal, vinyl releases some of the most toxic chemicals on the planet that have been linked to cancer, birth defects, and other serious chronic diseases. The production of vinyl has poisoned and contaminated workers and fence line communities in places like Cancer Alley, Louisiana, and Texas. And there's a lot more information specific about the chemical makeup, but it bothers me. I mean, I know paints can also be toxic. I have two or three issues with this project, and I want to not just be a wet blanket, because I think the intentions are good. I know that on my property, I have one of those lower boxes, and I would just want it painted a color that blends in with the surroundings. I would never want a design. I mean, I shouldn't say never, but you know. So I go on. I don't want to interrupt too much, but I do think that the environmental hazards of vinyl are part of the problem.
Yeah, and I'll talk about that a little bit in a slide that we have coming up. So here's a local example. This is actually from very recently in the past couple of years here at the reserve at Linwood. It's a apartment complex that was built off of Scriber Lake Road. This box is out in the open. This is a pad mounted switchgear. And they had a request from the city because it's in I think they call it like an urban beautification area, basically, that they wanted some fashion of altering of the appearance of the utility boxes. Initially, they wanted to build a wall in front of this, and we allowed for it to be repainted a solid color. So obviously, this one's not our typical transformer green. And then here's another example right up from the electric building of what we would call a screen, but it's basically an enclosure that was put around a pad mounted transformer in front of the library. What's not necessarily 100% obvious from this picture is that it does have a gap around the bottom of it, and there's no top on it. And that's just to allow for airflow around the unit. So the actual unit is not that big. It's inside of it because it has to meet all of our clearance standards that we still have for things like landscaping. So a summary of the decorative wrap program. Customers would apply to have certain pad mounted equipment wrapped or approved for decorative vinyl wrap. The customer would be responsible for the cost of installation, future maintenance, and replacement of the wraps. The district may replace that equipment at any time. If the equipment would fail overnight, if it would be hit by a car, et cetera. There would be district guidelines in place for content that could be placed on the wrap. We have an internal team put together cross-functionally from different departments for review of applications. And then there would be a vendor and installer approval process. Basically, this is just making sure that the vendor can get their hands on the material that we specify and that the installer is both certified to install that material and has gone through safety orientation with us to make sure that they're doing the work safely and they're aware of the hazards that are present. As a side note, you all may have seen this particular cabinet. I believe this is a City of Everett or a DOT cabinet. It's down by the Frontier Building off of, is it 41st, where it crosses the freeway there. So this is kind of an example of what typically is being done, not only here, but elsewhere. So what's changed? Why are we looking at allowing for this now? Well, ultimately, changing development standards and municipal zoning is making our equipment more visible than ever. We're getting more requests to hide or improve the visual aesthetics of the district equipment. We have a district team that's considering the risks and benefits through research of industry criteria and standards and growing customer preferences. Materials have greatly improved over the years, and now to us, they are preferred over paint. This is for a few reasons. I think one of the main reasons is that we have control over that material and the process used to apply it. And there are environmental concerns, I agree. No matter what route you go, paint has chemicals in it. The vinyl, you know, obviously it's going to be made up. It is essentially a plastic sheet that's printed upon. So my understanding of the manufacturing process on that is that the particular vinyl that we're going to use is made by 3M. We've talked at length with the company that supplies a lot of our decals. They're our preferred experts when we're researching things like this. They have tons of great feedback. They're certified through 3M to both print and install these, actually, which is a little bit unique. But basically, it's PVC plasticizer and pigments that are mixed together. They go through a casting process to get them into sheets, and then they are essentially baked to get the solvents out of them in a controlled environment. In ovens. So once those solvents evaporate, you're left with the film behind it. And then they use just an inkjet printer to print on top of them. So when you look at environmentally, you're either doing paint prep and painting locally at the site where you're getting that onto the ground and into the air with the worker, or you're doing manufacturing process elsewhere where they should hopefully, one would hope, be using air filtration and whatnot to catch the byproducts of that at the plant. And then when it comes here to get applied, it's applied with water. It's basically just the transformers cleaned and wetted down, and then they squeegee the water out from underneath of it. It goes on like a sticker, essentially. It's similar to how they tint windows on a car. So others within the industry are allowing it with great success stories. That would include SMUD, PSE. If you Google their Artility program, they've had great results with that. BC Hydro allows it as well. Some of the pictures that you'll see as we keep moving through the slides here are pictured. Most of them are from other utilities because we don't currently have any out in the field yet. So some benefits to the district. This is the proven to discourage graffiti, artwork, and natural landscapes. Allowing for wraps and limiting the allowance for decorative enclosures is safer for our field workers. When we do have those enclosures, we are creating an artificially confined space. that makes it tougher for them to work in. It provides just another obstacle that they have to watch out for, and for things to get hung up on while they're in the field. Again, the installation process is better for the equipment than paint. There's no harsh prep products or processes that can compromise a factory coating on the equipment. It gives the district an option to proactively extend to the customers when we need to place our equipment in visible high traffic places. And it provides opportunities for the district to collaborate with the communities which we serve.
Tyler, what happens with graffiti now? We send someone out to repaint the transformer?
Yeah, we'll send someone out from our apparatus shop to go repaint. And what they end up doing is they use a can of spray paint that goes over it. And, you know, between, both the time it's spent out in the field and just variations between manufacturers, that paint is close, but it never really completely matches, as I'm sure people have seen. So it over time, if you have something that's frequently tagged, you start to end up with this kind of tie-dyed effect on it.
And so how would that work with the wrap then? Would it be cleaned? Would the paint come off it? And who would be responsible for that?
Yeah, so what would happen is we have some options there, and that's still what we're kind of fleshing out, is that there is an option to have a graffiti-resistant coating or layer added to the vinyl that makes it much easier to just wipe it off with cleaner. We tested, and I wish I had a picture of this in here, but our ARC trailer that we use for the demonstrations actually has a pad mounted transformer that we wrapped as a demonstration, working with the line department and the apparatus shop on it. It is very hard to tell that it's not painted, but we took scraps of that sample when it was wrapped, and we actually tried to paint it and then wipe it off. And we also stuck our decals to it, our safety decals, to see whether that bond would be good on there. And the good news is that the safety decals stick very well, and the paint is much easier to get off than it is to go back and paint the transformer or other equipment after the fact.
Great, thank you.
So this is an example, just to point it out, from BC Hydro. They had a contest where they unlike our art contest, where they used students' art to wrap some of their equipment. but some benefits to the customer. They're getting an engineered product that's been reviewed by our standards department. So there is a reasonable expectation of field service life. And also we're going to be able to kind of pre-inspect the site and the age of the equipment to advise them on whether or not that equipment might be scheduled for replacement in the near future, so that they don't go forward with doing this and then show up one morning and it's a new one sitting there. The vendor installer approval process will ensure that the customer is getting a product that should last long term. It should provide a clear and easy process for applying to wrap the equipment. And then it's much easier to change the artwork periodically if that's desired. The wrap can be removed and replaced much easier than a repaint. If you were to repaint, you would either obviously have to paint and primer back over it, or try and, you know, remove the paint or sand it off. And we really don't want a bunch of coats of paint on these. We ultimately want to preserve the factory coating as much as possible. And so adding this vinyl layer adds minimal disturbance to that factory coating. So one of the things that I know that is at the top of people's minds on this are any safety considerations of moving this direction. And I wanted to throw this out there just so that everybody was aware that all of the equipment, regardless of whether it's wrapped, whether it's painted, is manufactured in a manner that does not allow for anything to be inserted into the energized compartments. There's actually an IEEE standard that's referenced on here for that enclosure integrity. All of the doors, latches, anything like that have a sill within them, so you can't actually jam anything into there. So this does not compromise the electrical safety of the equipment at all. All of the required safety and identification decals will be placed over the tops of the wraps after application, and they'll be done to the safety standard listed there as well. And then we reserve the right to have the customer remove the wrap if any issues are encountered. If we did have a piece of equipment that somehow began to deteriorate, or if we felt like it was overheating due to the installation of the wrap, we would have it removed. We have seen no evidence and heard of no evidence from other utilities that we've talked to on this that it will compromise the equipment in any way, shape, or form. Ultimately, it's been met with good reviews at the places that have offered this. And I see that there's a question.
Thank you. About the decals, did you say that they don't stick very well?
No, they stick very well. They stick like,
thank you.
Yeah, our decals that we use are some of the highest grade adhesive that you can get. They're similar to car tabs. So once they're on there, they are on there. Okay. And it is very hard to get them off.
Maybe I misheard you. Okay, thanks.
And I figured I'd leave room for questions at the end here, and also kind of a visual of one of our pad mounted transformers, because it was sitting there. And I could tell that this has potentially had graffiti on it in the past, in contrast with the box in the back that that has that decorative wrap on there. So you can see kind of the difference that you could potentially have folks have should they choose to wrap these in some more of the more visible places in our service territory.
Questions for Tyler, commissioners?
I'd be interested to hear from my fellow commissioners how they feel about this. Or is this not the proper time?
No, I'm thrilled. I've been wanting these for a long time. I don't find our equipment especially attractive, and so I am thrilled. I know some municipalities I've been approached before about, you know, can we wrap? I've seen other cities that do it. I think Portland might be one that has some beautiful art. I do have some questions, and that is, how do we qualify the artwork that's going to go on there?
Yeah, my question too.
I'm sure municipalities would pick appropriate things, but there might be some, you know, if a business wanted a transformer and they were a bar or they were a marijuana dispensary, are we going to have certain kinds of images on our transformers?
Right.
I apologize.
And that, so we've thought through that. Basically, the cross-functional group that's looked at this, we have guidelines, and I don't have them in front of me right now. I can forward those over if you wish. But basically, it's pretty similar to our directive almost on what is appropriate for a display in the office. So, you know, we need to have nothing offensive, nothing obscene, no advertisements, no political affiliations. And then as far as who approves last check on that, I know that there are art and beautification districts similar to the one that from the reserve at Linwood there earlier, where the city or the municipality, HOA, any of those groups would have to sign off as well, obviously. So we're putting that on the customer that's requesting to wrap the equipment to reach out to any of those groups before they get it to us. Basically, we want to be the last check just on that it doesn't go against our values as being the equipment owner and operator.
So, question.
Mm-hmm.
I know I read that there's an internal team that's going to decide on what's appropriate and what they like and so forth. Is there any way that we as commissioners who have a background in art, which I know that Commissioner Logan, I mean, Commissioner Olson does, I do, and have served, you know, on art directorates and so forth. Can we be involved at all in the choice of what goes on our equipment? Could we serve on a committee with, I mean, just a question. I guess I would hope that we would have some ability to say, well, we don't think that would be helpful or that wouldn't be good. You know, in Edmonds, we have a lot of murals. I don't know if you've been to Edmonds. And they're usually on big blank walls in alleyways and places like that, which is fine. And a lot of people really enjoy them. So I'm not just, I certainly love art. And I just want to make sure that they're not distractions from the surroundings, if you know what I mean. Like we're blessed, unlike Sacramento, for it was SMUD, we have forests, we have trees, and a lot of our equipment is not in those places. But where it is, it would be nice if it could blend in more with the surroundings. I think that's just my personal preference. And I don't know. I know Commissioner Olson, you worked on an art, you worked in art, didn't you? Providing art?
Not visual art, performing arts.
Oh, performing arts. Oh, well, we could put, yeah. We could put a little, you know.
Put somebody up in there and a tutu.
I guess I think that it sounds like that the municipality would have say in the art. So I think you answered my question, Tyler. I was wanting to make sure someone looks at it. We have our own guidelines, but it's it'll be up to the county. If it's in the county, it'll be up to a city. If it's in the city jurisdiction, and so. I guess I don't want to be in the position of telling the city that I think, you know, they're choosing inappropriate art as a commissioner anyway.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And for example, I know we have an art commission here in Edmonds. And so if one of these was in Edmonds and we were going to do it, it'd be nice to, you know, see if they think it's appropriate or if they think it's helpful to the overall effect of the city. I mean, I don't know. I think it really would be good to have some art-based people involved. And I don't know about your internal team. I don't know what backgrounds they have. And is there like a selection? Like, you know how Microsoft and others, they have all these potential screens, not screensavers, but desktop pictures.
Yeah.
Is there like, okay, we have 100 of these, and these are your choice. These are your options. Do we have anything like that?
We talked about putting that together for folks that just don't want it. You know, they just don't want the box to be green. They want the process to be easy, that we would potentially be able to have a repository that has just stock art that's been approved that represents the service territory and maybe some local interest for that specific area, you know, whether it be power themed or elsewise. So that's one thing that the group has talked about. I think the big thing here to take away is that realistically, we want to see folks work with the local municipalities and those boards as the approval for what's on there. And we just want to make sure that our ability to approve and or deny, I think where we would get concerned actually is if the thing blends in too much. We don't want it to be hard for the line crews to find at night. That's the one thing that that we're concerned about. Our decals are reflective, so that helps quite a bit, that, you know, it'll appear nice during the day, look nice during the day. The second it gets dark and you have a spotlight or a flashlight out, it's gonna definitely stand out if you're flashing that across it, our safety and identification decals. So, you know, again, I think that our role hopefully is a rubber stamp on the approval process and just making sure that we're not going too far in camouflaging these, almost would be the way to put it. Mm-hmm. That it complements the area, it doesn't camouflage the equipment.
Okay, and Tyler, my final question has to do with the cost. You've probably compared the cost. I mean, it might be a little complicated if you compared the cost of painting and repainting and labor and all of that compared mm-hmm. to the cost of installation and upkeep on these as well. Do you know how they compare?
I think they compare pretty favorably. It's kind of subjective in terms of the cost as how big of a piece of equipment you're going to apply this to.
Right.
You know, go ahead, Joe.
Let me just chime in here. And I think you covered this in the presentation, Tyler. We won't cover the cost. The customers, right?
Absolutely.
So the customers pay for the wrap, pay for the installation. If it has to be redone, any maintenance, that's on the customer.
Yes.
Well, I misunderstood. That's what I was hoping. But what I heard was that they would pay for the installation, but they also pay for the wrap itself.
Yes.
Great.
Yes, they pay for everything.
Yep. All right.
Just like in the just like case that we currently allow with the single color change or the, you know, screening fencing, that's all paid for by the customer. That today is paid for by the customer on that. So this would be no different. It's just a different method of altering the appearance of the equipment.
Hey, Tyler, it looks like Doug O'Donnell wants to pop in. I'm sorry, John.
No, go ahead. And I'll follow up. Afterwards.
Doug O'Donnell had his hand raised, and so I think he wanted to say something.
Oh, hey, thanks. I'll just real quick get Commissioner Wolf to further increase your comfort level with this. I the City of Linwood and the City of Edmonds both have art commissions. They're early requesters of this, and they will, all of the artwork will be directed through them and by them.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you. That's good to know.
That was perfect, Doug, because that's the comments that I wanted to make to Commissioner Wolf. That one, we're not doing this to go out and market this or promote this. We want to provide it as an option to those communities, neighborhood associations, so on and so forth, that would like to do this. And you know, Doug hit the nail on the head, and I think Tyler did as well. We want them to come up with the artwork, design, whatever, based on their themes, whatever they think is appropriate for the community, so on and so forth, messaging. It has to pass kind of muster for us on nothing offensive, nothing political, things like that. That's what the review committee is really to do, not based on the art or design, anything like that. That will be the, you know, the,
okay.
Agency, if you will, that is looking to have a different different type of art on our equipment. Did I say that correctly, Tyler?
Yeah, exactly. That's a great summary of it. It really is. We're just our goal is to be the rubber stamp, and we're mainly looking more at, is it going to hit to the point of being difficult to find? That's what we would be concerned about for the most part. And then just making sure that they know that, hey, we're going to have to put decals here, here, and here in accordance with the applicable safety standards.
So no Van Gogh Starry Night then.
Well, this is related to those. Is that you call that a transformer box? Like this, the one on the far left in that picture?
Yes. Yeah, that's a pad mounted transformer.
Okay, what happened? This is not exactly related, but in my case, we have a very stubborn holly tree that likes to come up really close to it, or maybe even under it. Mm-hmm. And should I call PUD about that? Because we've tried to get it out. We've dug it out. We've put the root killer on it and everything. So what do we do when we have a situation where vegetation is threatening one of our, I might be threatening, I don't know, maybe not.
On pad mounted equipment, I'm pretty sure it's the homeowner. On the pad mounted stuff, on the overhead lines, okay. We do our tree trimming on that.
Here. Thank you.
Sorry.
But yeah, there is a decal that goes on the front of them that talks about the clearance that we ask that that's provided for safety and working clearance.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments, commissioners?
Well, Commissioner Olson hasn't weighed in yet. And I've sat back and a lot of the questions I have already been answered. I think I've got it right. I need clarification on one area. You mentioned we would pre-approve installers, like I guess we do for our weatherization work.
I would liken it more to how we do our meter room locking course. We have an installer that we work with that we've approved for that. Little different reason on that. It's because of security reasons, somebody having the master keys to core our locks. But ultimately, the approval process on that is just to make sure that the folks are 3M certified for the install on it. So they have both access to the material that we specify, which is not given to just anybody, but it's not so restrictive that there's only two companies in the world that have it. And it's also, again, to make sure that they've gone through that safety orientation, just so that they know, what they're getting into. We need to know when they're completed with the work so we can go back out there to reapply those decals on the unit after they're done. So it's more of a formality just to make sure that those boxes are checked and then they're on our list, so that we have a list of folks that we can provide to the customers for pre-approved folks. And if they have someone else that says that they can do it, we'd be more than happy to have them do it as well. It's not meant to be an exclusive list. It's just more of a check off that those requirements are met.
Well, my reason for asking, and maybe that's not an issue here, is in terms of actually working around an electrical facility. What I thought you meant by pre-approved contractors, that they would be qualified to work on electrical.
No.
And that's not a concern?
No, not in this case. They're not going to be getting into the energized compartments at all. Okay. It's no different than anybody on the street could walk up to one of these pieces of equipment and touch it. They're just going to alter the appearance of it under our supervision.
Okay. And in terms of just a general statement, I always worry about liability. It's my assumption that is taken into consideration in terms of the utility's role in any of this, that we make sure that we cover ourselves in terms of liability or anything like that.
That's probably a better question for
Well, yes, Anne. I'm always worried about that.
So we do have a member from legal on the team, and we are going to include some provisions that make sure that the applicant is the one who bears all the liability and responsibility for those.
Great. Yeah. And okay, I got that question answered. I'm sorry, just a sec. And you said that they have to have something that are, oh, on the team that's working on it, what representation has there been from construction or crews?
So the team that's working on it right now, the standards department is kind of taking the lead for the crews on that. The crews have been involved in seeing the demo install that we had on the pad mounted transformer that feeds the ARC trailer. We had good feedback on that from, we had line inspectors, superintendents, servicemen, a pretty good cross section of folks, and everybody was in agreement that it was much preferred over putting up a wall or a fence or even paint. They saw it as equivalent to paint. Everyone that's handled it for working with the ARC trailer, the folks that do the demos at like the fair and stuff, have all said that they're pleased with the results on it. So our idea is that the crew portion will be involved as we get the applications, especially in local areas, that they would be part of helping to determine whether or not it's going to be difficult to find. And because that's going to be office by office, we would get them involved at that point.
Well, I just always think it's important because they're the ones that are out in the field. And I believe that their input should be given great consideration. I don't want to hold this up much longer. You talked about, we're not going to be designing anything, right? That's going to be the cities or homeowners association. Could they do this? Mm-hmm.
Other places have allowed homeowner associations to do it. They typically, we've had mixed results on hearing whether an individual homeowner would be eligible to do this, but homeowners associations are not outside the scope of this at this time.
Okay, and just one final, I'm not sure and this is just an observation. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. That having them, depending upon the design, will actually decrease. I think that a lot of folks with spray cans will love to fill in the blanks on those.
I agree.
I think it may draw more attention than a big, I know they're ugly, but anyway, I have no question around that. That's just an observation.
Well, if I could chime on to that, I'm skeptical that it really discourages graffiti, because I think it might be more tempting in some cases. So just a comment. I haven't seen the data, I haven't seen the evidence, but apparently there is some. I don't know, Tyler, you said you're confident that it does discourage graffiti.
Yeah, the feedback that we've gotten from other utilities is that it does discourage it. I mean, it's anecdotal because we've noticed that there's less graffiti because nobody's necessarily tracking these instances, instance for instance. But my theory on that is that a solid background is easier for it to stand out on. And if it's artwork, it makes it much harder for it to pop out. So that could have something to do with it.
And it's easier to wash off than it would be if it.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. It'll run. In theory, the paint should run if they're using spray paint, and so it won't necessarily stick.
Okay.
Like it would to just a solid surface.
Well, you've answered all of my concerns.
Any other questions, commissioners?
I don't mean to belabor this. And we're not marketing it or anything like that, but do we have the right to say no, we don't want it on that installation?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I'm done.
So a homeowner wouldn't be able to do theirs, right? We're not going to have Cougar Art and UW Art. And maybe it's a better question for John.
Okay. You caught me. That's the real, genesis behind this.
Well, since I'm a Coug and John's an adopted Coug now.
Gonzaga.
Well, I think it's a great idea. I think it'd be fun to see, I know there'd be some expense, but it'd be interesting to see our student art contest winners every year or something on maybe some district boxes, district facilities or something. Just a thought.
Yeah, I love that idea. I really do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and once we have, we're trying to work through the first install with the city of Mill Creek. Once we have that, we can certainly send that your way so that you can see what that looks like as a finished product.
Yeah, they've done those bookmarks. They've had, you know, the bookmark contests in the education division. Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
All right. Anything else for Tyler?
Thank you. That was an excellent, comprehensive presentation.
Thank you.
Great job. Great job, Tyler. Thank you.
Well, we have just enough time to take some public comments. If you'd like to provide public, John, you have nothing else this morning, right?
Nope, that's it.
Okay. If you'd like to provide public comment, please indicate you'd like to speak by raising your hand, or if you're using your telephone today, dial *9. Okay, I'm not seeing anyone raising their hand. So it is now 11:45 and our meeting is recessed. Our regular meeting will reconvene virtually at 1:30 p.m. See you all after lunch.